Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Upon laying their eyes on the CD Imperial, Couch's fellow would-be showgirls immediately recognized it as a low-class dive and left. But Agnes, young, naive, and probably broke, went inside. The young recruit was led to her private bedroom to catch up on her rest. While eating lunch with her fellow performers during the first day, she realized she was in depraved surroundings.
Welcome to Right Lane, a podcast of the Tampa Bay Times. Each week, Times reporter Lane DeGregory discusses her stories and answers your questions. The focus is on craft. My name is Maria Carrillo, and I'm the enterprise editor at the Times. Today's topic, finding stories from the past. Joining us today is Andrew Hughes. Andrew works as a librarian who specializes in archives at the University of South Florida Tampa Libraries Special Collections, where all the coolest and rarest materials reside. He writes, speaks, and cooks about history when he can. His latest book is called From Saloons to Steakhouses, A History of Tampa. Thanks for joining us. So tell us first off how you came up with the title or the idea for this book. The title and the idea for this book.
The idea was it was a roundabout way. I first thought of it about a little over 20 years ago, actually, as a history of food and restaurants. I mean, originally it was bars. And then I started to realize there's no records and not many reliable memories when it comes to bars. So I decided it probably wasn't a good subject. But when I was a history student, I just noticed that really that's a subject that hadn't been touched on much by, you know, previous historians. And some things have been kind of overdone, like I think the lectors. I was interested in a kind of a broader look at Tampa's history. I think professors are naturally drawn to the lectors, you know, people who speak for a living. They have a captive audience. I guess I just wanted to look at Tampa in a different way and, you know, and still incorporate like all those, you know, important issues like race and, you know, diversity and all that stuff, but fold it in a way where, you know, it wasn't like about race in Tampa. It's about life in Tampa, and race is one aspect of that.
I love that lens, and I learned so much. And things that were going on in the 1880s that mirrored stuff that was going on now was so fascinating. Like the whole idea that strip clubs existed, you know, 150 years ago, there were burlesque and strip clubs in Tampa. What did you learn about your city when you put that lens on it and then decided, like, here's what I'm going to dig down in this piece of Tampa, you know, the kind of, I don't want to say seedier side, but the more like entertainment outside of work side of Tampa.
Right. What was the question again? You know, how did I?
What you learned about your city.
Yeah. I mean, I learned a lot. Someone once told me that, like, that Tampa's one of those cities where if you pull on a string or a story long enough, it has, like, national implications. There's like, all the national stuff plays out locally, and that happens everywhere. But I really found that was true. Like, I had heard about the Imperial Theater and the burlesque and all that stuff. And, you know, originally I was going to write about Joe Redner, and I was like, why am I writing about Joe Redner? I'm going to write about this guy who did it originally, like, way back when, you know, this Greek immigrant. And I had no idea that he was like a test case for the White Slave Act, you know, or the Mann Act. So like, as I pulled on that string, I get all the way to the Supreme Court and I'm like, oh my God. And then, so first of all, I'm delighted because I've got transcripts to work with, you know, that were, you know, they're available through the Supreme Court. But second of all, I just had no idea that it became that big of an issue. And this guy, he couldn't get arrested or catch a cold in Tampa, but, you know, he eventually was indicted and went to prison for this kind of a trumped up charge. You know, it was sexual harassment for sure. But, you know, I don't know if it warranted the punishment. The other thing is like the glass scare during World War One. I had no idea it even happened. And then like I'm looking at this story and it's playing out locally. And then, you know, I'm looking at an attorney general's report from 1918 going like, you know, it's hard for us to do our job during the war because everyone is so hysterical. But yet it was a state that of the populace that they liked. You know, they said it was people were being vigilant, but they were really kind of going half crazy and all trying to throw each other in jail and, you know, whatever. So there was a lot of surprises, you know. I had read about a lot of history of Tampa before, and it sounded really dramatic, but it didn't always come across that way on the page. So I guess one of the things I want to do is kind of capture a bunch of that drama too, you know, and not just the facts.
And it was fascinating how you wove the media into it too. And I mean, as a newspaper person, to see kind of how the media bought into this glass scare and sort of was like racially divisive and religiously divisive, and through the media was helping to fan that and to make those divides. And so I really loved all the primary source documents. So for you guys who haven't read the book yet, go buy Andrew's book. But it's fascinatingly written with footnotes, so you can go back and look at all the sources that he found this stuff from. Can you walk us through a little bit of your process of researching this?
Right. Actually, I mean, newspapers were really important because I knew some of the broader strokes of stories that were happening, but you can't really see how that plays out through, you know, records and stuff like that, you know, kind of more bureaucratic stuff. You know, the newspapers are really what captures, you know, what's going on day to day, and they're flawed sources, you know, and that much, you know, like, you know, the Tampa Tribune was never friendly towards labor, you know, for example, and it was absolutely like virulently against labor 100 years ago. And so, you know, they wore that stuff on their sleeve, you know? So I think you get to know, you know, your sources after a while and what you can trust and what you can't. And there's certainly times where you couldn't trust, you know, what was being written, but then there's a lot of times where it's your only shot at getting something true and something that feels, you know, that feels like a story rather than, you know, an analysis.
You talk a little more about, you said you found like Supreme Court transcripts or, you know, so aside from newspapers, what were some of the most valuable documents that you found?
Right. A couple of them were actually scrapbooks, and they were really valuable because they were sort of pathfinders, you know, where one of them was about Bartke's restaurant. So Bartke's Steakhouse, I devote one of the chapters to that. And it sort of mapped out the whole history, you know, for me, you know, with a menu in there and all this other stuff. So it's like, wow, I've got all this information. Now I can go ahead and look up the patents that he did for this Gretchen Broil-O-Matic grill that he had, and look up other stuff. So trying to think of some of the other good sources. I mean, the city of Tampa was really helpful. They have a lot of digitized materials from their archives. So, for example, I was able to look at the minutes for city council, which is very interesting because there's always like a few people who want to do the right thing, but there's never enough. You know, and if the city council, right, if the city council votes to do something, then will the mayor even bother to do it? It's, you know, it's real Wild West stuff. And you know, a lot of things haven't changed much, but, so there's, you know, there's all kinds of sources. I'm trying to think of some of the other good ones. You know, the meeting minutes, the other one was, the city, ordinances. They, you know, they're just passing ordinances like every week, you know, and after a while they're so overlapping and complex that nobody can really make sense of, is it legal to drink on a Sunday or not, you know? So at one point, I think in the late 1800s, they just wiped the board clean and kind of started over because it was such a mess. So that's, you know, those are interesting sources, those kinds of things. But then, of course, people are a great source, you know. So in later chapters, I was able to do some interviews with people involved in, like, the civil rights movement, Bartke's restaurant, other places like that. So, and I'm, you know, a huge fan of oral history and interviews. And I just think that that's, you know, you can't get that from a book. So.
You had like other treasures, like letters, like during the Spanish American War, letters from some of the privates, a letter from Carl Sandburg about tainted beef or something that was right. So interesting. I was like, I never thought of Carl Sandburg as a private in a, you know, a military maneuver there. How did you find those? And were those things that you knew you already had in your special collections, or did you go out seeking for some of those?
Some of those were actually documented in other sources. So like in Carl Sandburg was later famous poet. So, you know, so his stuff tended to get amplified a little bit. But then we also have stuff in our collections at USF. So yeah, I'm the archivist there. So we do have some letters. We've got a really interesting set of materials about a guy who died of disease while in New York after he got landed back from Cuba. But this, you know, this whole thing of a single soldier and this whole thing, you know, barely fought and died of disease, you know, sitting in an open air camp where they, you know, were totally overwhelmed and couldn't deal with it. So, and then the parents trying to get, you know, some sort of restitution and, you know, figure out what happened exactly. So those kinds of things tell a story in and of itself, you know, a bigger story that I can use as a cog in my story. So, but I was really the embalmed beef thing to me was another great find. Like I had always heard about Congress spent years talking about this embalmed beef scandal. And then to find out it all happened here, like it was all a result of a misunderstanding with this kind of charlatan beef guy showing off his beef in the sun. And then, you know, a general thinking that's what the soldiers were eating. Now the soldiers, what they were eating wasn't really much better. It was really terrible canned beef. But that's a whole nother story. So it was great to be able to find stuff, you know, behind that I don't know if anyone's connected those dots quite like that before.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So, same thing with like the glass scare. I've never heard this stuff mentioned, in subsequent histories because it's not something to be proud of, really, these kinds of things.
So, Andrew, what advice do you have for journalists who are trying to reconstruct scenes and stories from the past? What have you learned doing some of this work?
I mean, I've learned a lot from journalists, to be honest, and from other authors and stuff. I don't know. I mean, I don't consider myself a great writer. I think I can pull a story together. I think a big part of it, you know, is just, I think a young student especially learn to take yourself out of it. You know, if there's something you want to say, find a source that says it for you instead of saying, this is what I think, you know? I think that's a good thing. But the other thing is also, and I don't do it enough, but, you know, just description of basic stuff. Like if I want to set the scene, look up the weather that day, you know, what was the weather report like? It gives you something, you know, else to throw in there. I guess the other thing is, it's funny because I don't really consider it like a book with a humorous book, but there's humor sort of built into it. Appreciate absurdity and stuff, and so it's not something that I really play up a lot or anything, but I do feel like someone told me use the word pithy to describe, you know, some of my descriptions and stuff, and I did look it up before I decided whether it was a good thing or not, but it's definitely a good thing, you know. I think that's accurate. I think there's a little pithiness here and there.
I think you also, one of the things that you do is you use the language of the times, which is really helpful, I think, in putting you back there. Like, you know, coochie coochie girls isn't something we talk about, at least I don't talk about it now.
But, right.
So I think that's some of the treasure to be found in old accounts. you know, where you get to see that and sort of bring you back to the day.
Right. Yeah. And also, and just what they found funny, what they found offensive then, you know, one of the great exercises, if you want to go just look up like a newspaper database and just look up the word unspeakable, you will find like all kinds of craziness because it's unspeakable, you know, like, and they use that word a lot. Like now, you know, you don't say, cause you can say anything you want and you know, it doesn't seem to matter, but back then there was all these unspeakable stories. So I think that's a great idea for a book or a, you know, a series, Unspeakable History, right?
There's the next podcast. Right. Now you had some like amazingly minutia details too that I just found myself grinning at when I came across, like when Prohibition stopped finally, you had the number of beers sold on the very first day after Prohibition. You had 280,000 bottles and 17,000 gallons of beer, draft beer. I mean, and then you had the superlative, right? More than any other county in Florida. And the nickels, that all of a sudden the mint was producing more nickels because jukeboxes became popular. I mean, that right. shit was like mind blowing, you know, like how did you come across those little details about like you said, these kind of national phenomenons?
I mean, you're just trolling sources constantly. So, I mean, if, you know, like I think the numbers of beers, some, you know, a journalist at the time, you know, wrote that, but then the whole nickels thing, you know, I just learned about, you know, doing research about jukeboxes for, you know, juke joints and everything. So that was just one thing. I was like, oh, what a great little fact. I had no idea. And that's like huge. Like when the mint has to make more nickels, like, and like millions of more nickels is a big deal. Like it shows you just how much it's changed the culture and currency. So
that was
fascinating. Yeah, so I love those little things, and I just save them because you don't know if you're gonna be able to use it or not. And you know, and the thing is I'm sure you guys run into the same thing where, you know, what you publish is just a fraction of kind of what you did. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's so true with history too, because a lot of times I'm pulling on multiple strings to see if any of them play out. You know, some of them don't go anywhere. This guy wasn't important or wasn't what I thought or whatever. So there's a lot of dead ends. But then a lot of stuff that you have to know just so you know it. You know what I mean? Like the audience doesn't necessarily have to know like the details of the Panama Canal Treaty or something. But in order for you to write about it authoritatively, you have to know. So that makes it kind of hard too. You know, you're getting a lot of information, you know, and trying to incorporate it all together. So I'm sure you guys run into the same thing.
Andrew, how can journalists partner with librarians, do you think, on this kind of work? Because like I assume, like just listening to you talk, I have no idea what you have available, like what's at your right. fingertips.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the big struggles with with any archive. And the people who do know about us are the people who are already using us, right? But yeah, I mean, we have so much stuff and it's growing. So like some of the kinds of things I made a couple notes for myself being a good employee. You know, I mean, some of the papers just are relevant to this is like the WPA papers. So like, for example, all these writers who were out of work in the 1930s, a lot of really progressive writers for their time are all writing about the demographics of, you know, Hillsborough County of Florida, Tampa. They're doing this all over the state. So they're writing about the Seminole language. They're writing about, you know, Czechoslovakian music, you know, Cuban, they call it voodoo, but it was really Santeria. So there's a lot of amazing stuff in that collection, and they don't always get it right. And it's not always like up to, you know, 21st century standards of kind of liberality, but they're still way ahead of their time. And there are a lot of really, really important scholars worked for the program, Stetson Kennedy, Zora Neale Hurston, people like that. So that to me is just a treasure. We have all the papers of like the Mutual Aid Society, so the Cuban Club, the Martín Maceo Club, which is the Afro-Cuban Club, you know, the other, the Italian Club and the Spanish and Asturian Club. So those are all really interesting. And we got like, for example, we have all these old playbills from their theaters. That stuff gets used a lot. People are like studying like ethnic theater in the 20s and 30s. It's a gold mine. You know, we got all kinds of stuff having to do with the cigar industry, cigar labels and art. You know, and then like even the Columbia restaurant, we have their papers. We don't have all the old recipes. I would like the old recipe book if we could ever get a hold of that, but I'm sure we'd have to keep that in the vault somewhere. You know, and oral history, we've got all kinds of oral histories of people who are no longer with us. Just great stuff. You know, I think I did a 24-hour interview, not all at once, but with Sam Gibbons, which is just fascinating. I think we spent 4 hours on D-Day and the night before D-Day, you know, when he jumped into Normandy as a paratrooper. Just great stuff there. And then this is another kind of wild example. A few years ago, we got a bunch of midwife records. So Maria Greco is a midwife here in Tampa, and we've got these three pads, and it's just a list of names, you know, it written in pencil. As she delivered each one, she just wrote it down. It's like, wow, you know, really cool. So there's all kinds of stuff back there. And the fact is that I'm still finding stuff that I didn't know about, you know, I'm still connecting dots, you know, it's a wonderful place to work. There's just so much cool stuff and still mysteries back there, you know.
Sounds like do you take anything that somebody will give you? Like if somebody says,
no, not anything, not anything. But we take a lot of, you know, a lot of different stuff, you know, if it's helpful for, you know, future researchers. And I guess that's really the biggest challenge for an archivist is how do you anticipate that? Nobody could have anticipated 100 years ago that people will be studying like LGBTQ history right now so intensely. I don't think anybody would have, you know, would have predicted that in 1920. So who knows, you know, 100 years from now, what will be the big thing, you know?
What's been the reaction to the book so far?
Well, it's been hard because, you know, we've been all on lockdown. People might need something to read.
Yeah, there's that.
So I figured that, but it's been hard to get out and, you know, do any kind of promotion. But you know, thanks so much for having me on. But you know, I've gotten some reviews back just from people who I respect and everything. And it's been good. I'm, you know, for me, it's a bonus when people read it at all. You know, I mean, I kind of did this, so much of it was just this internal goal of mine. And that, you know, when I publish it, I'll cross that bridge later. I'm not really worried about that so much. Right. So that's how I got here. but it's really encouraging. I mean, to see any kind of, you know, any good reviews and people who enjoy it. Cause I mean, I wrote, it's sort of like, you know, starting a band to write music that you want to listen to, you know? So this is a kind of my approach to history, you know, a little, hopefully easier to read, you know, and maybe keep you turning the pages. So.
Well, there was so much in there you wouldn't hear from other history books. You know, it didn't feel like a history book. It felt like a personal account of like this side of Tampa that not many people have explored. So thank you for sharing that with us.
Oh, thanks.
You guys.
Okay, if you have a question for Andrew or for Lane or want to suggest a podcast topic, find us on our Facebook group or email it to writelane@tampabay.com. That's writelane@tampabay.com. Join us next week on Wednesday morning for the next podcast. This podcast was produced by Ayana Ishmael. Music was composed and performed by Dan DeGregory. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.